It's very strange that God designed sleep. If you look at, okay, God designed us to work the garden and to rule and have dominion and be fruitful and multiply, we should stop and ask the question of, okay, so why in the world, with him starting from a blank canvas, would he say, let's have it be that humans shut down for 8 hours a day, a third of their life, they're going to live in darkness and have no effect in advancing my glory on planet Earth. And you could argue that sleep is the first thing that humans did. You know, if we take Genesis literally as a narrative, which I know there can be a lot of debate around there, you'd say, okay, humans made on day six. The seventh day starts with the evening. There's evening and morning the first day. So Adam's all excited. He's ready to, you know, take territory, get to know his wife, extend Eden into Earth. And God says, okay, time to go to sleep. Yeah, it's going to get dark and your eyes are going to close and you're not going to be able to function for the next 8 hours.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ, welcome to Empowered Manhood. Hey guys, welcome back. My name is Mike Hatch, and I am your host, and I'll be joined shortly, of course, by my co-host, best-selling author Chris Bollinger. And by the way, a special welcome for those of you who are maybe listening for the first time, maybe this is the first episode, a very warm welcome to you. And then one other welcome, I have gotten so much feedback from women who are listening to this podcast, and I just want to give a shout out to you ladies out there who are listening. I see you, we see you, we hear from you. And man, I just want to acknowledge that you're there and grateful that you are listening right along with all these other guys. So welcome to the podcast. Today, we are talking with Caleb Spittler. And Caleb Spittler helps corporate executives and their teams maximize their productivity through rest and recovery. He is the founder of Restio.us. Of course, we'll have links all below in the show notes. But after receiving coaching from some of the top recovery experts in the world and personal experimentation, Caleb has been able to transform his life and dramatically increase his productivity. As a former athlete and award-winning sales professional, he learned that the highest performers in any industry have elite strategies for recovery. Specifically today, we want to talk about sleep, because we've actually had a couple guests on talk about rest, and we thought this would be a great opportunity to get really practical and talk about something that I think so many people struggle with, is getting enough sleep or getting enough quality sleep. And as men, this man can this sneak in. We want to do so much. We want to accomplish so much. We can be hard drivers, hustlers, grinders, and it's easy to compromise our sleep for the sake of productivity. Of course, Caleb tells us and informs us that that is absolutely the wrong way of living our lives, especially with regard to how God calls us to live our lives. I think you guys are going to be blown away by some of the insights from a scriptural standpoint that we get into with Caleb. So I'm really looking forward to you hearing this. And before we jump in really quick, just a reminder, we are a listener-supported podcast. So we would very much appreciate your financial support if God would be moving you to do that. Thank you so much. You can go to our webpage, clchq.org, click on the blue donate button, and then you'll come up with a new window and a box that you can designate how much money you'd like to donate. And then you can choose in the drop-down menu, National Fund. And then in the comments, just type in there, Empowered Manhood, so that we know that you found us through the podcast. And then, of course, the last thing I'll mention is my book, which just which is releasing. People are getting them delivered actually early. It was supposed to be released on Amazon April 4th. That's what it says on Amazon, but people who ordered it, have already pre-ordered it, are starting to receive their copies. So first of all, thank you for pre-ordering if that's you, and hopefully you'll get it sooner than later and won't have to wait till after April 4th. So make sure you check that out. There'll be more information in the show notes for you to look into that. All right, guys, so let's go ahead and dive in and find out more about sleep and how to better get better quality sleep and what the Bible has to say about that as we dive into this interview with Caleb Spittler. Caleb Spittler, welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast.
Thanks, Mike. Honor to be here.
So we had a conversation, in, has it been a couple weeks ago? A few weeks ago
Yeah.
was the last time we spoke? Okay. And I'm excited to talk about sleep. And we've had a couple other folks on who've talked about rest and Sabbath, getting away from the digital world, you know, and finding rest in that. But I'm excited about this angle because you're specifically, we're going to talk about sleep and the significance of sleep. And I really believe there's so much there. There's a lot spiritually, there's a lot from a biblical perspective I know we could get into. And I think it's something that hopefully as guys listen to this, they'll have some really great takeaways to apply to their own lives, because I just think sleep is so, would you say underrated, I guess, or at least taken for granted for sure. Mm-hmm. I think we take it for granted. So before we jump into all that though, Caleb, we'd love to hear your story, your fence post story. And for those who are joining us for the first time, just a reminder that if you imagine a fence along a property, you've got the horizontal pieces, and those vertical pieces hold up the whole thing. Those vertical pieces that are solidly in the ground represent, for us as men, those significant moments in life that made us who we are today, or people in life who made us who we are today. And so, Caleb, we'd love to get to know you a little bit better, man, and hear some of your fence posts.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, thanks for having me on. Certainly sleep is something that is a huge passion of mine, become a huge passion of mine. Never imagined as a little child that I would grow up to talk to people about sleep. But I agree, it is completely underrated. But before we jump into that, yeah, just to give you a little bit of my background, my dad is a pastor, so he had gone to, you know, Wheaton and Moody and Trinity, kind of all the schools that you probably would have heard of down in the Chicago area, and moved up to Wisconsin to plant a little church there. So yeah. I was 1 year old when he moved out of Chicago. He and my mom moved out of Chicago to go plant a church in rural Wisconsin. Yeah. So yeah, I've been a part of ministry as long as I can remember.
And I think that was, so I was in Chicago, Northwest suburbs for like 9 years. So those, all those places you mentioned are very familiar to me. And I remember being in those areas and man, Wheaton, you mentioned some of these places, Moody, that's like the, I don't know, would you call it the Mecca of evangelicalism in this country?
Yes.
So absolutely. You grew up in all that. And in Wisconsin, it's not too far away. They're affected by it too, for sure.
Correct. Yep. Yep, absolutely. So yeah, planting a church when I was 1 year old. So grew up very much involved in the ministry. You know, just kind of the classic pastor's kid, you know, playing all the instruments on all the worship teams, pretty much leading the youth group by the time I'm 16, you know, just
oh my goodness.
Really involved in ministry. I never had a rebellious season as a pastor's kid. Well, that's not true. I did decide to start swearing for 2 weeks, and that was in middle school. I said, you know what? I'm done with this pastor's kid thing. I'm going to start swearing. So all the kids would make fun of you. You know, you're the pastor's kid, and they'd say, well, come on, say a swear word. And I wouldn't. And then of course I went to like church camp or something and just bawled my eyes out and repented and, you know, never again. So,
wow. What? So you just decided, you just had a sudden rebellious inspiration, I guess.
I think most pastors' kids will go off the rails at some point. And so that was, for me, it just had a little detour into some some unholy language. So, didn't have a girlfriend till I was in my 20s. Didn't drink until I was, after 21. For the most part, was a good kid, loved Jesus, genuinely loved Jesus. had such great parents. So yeah, from there I went to Trinity as well. So, came out of Trinity, actually went to Trinity thinking I was going to do stuff in the medical world. So I did my first 3.5 years as a physical therapy major. But in the end, I felt the call of God on my life into ministry. So, came out of Trinity straight into youth ministry. So I was a youth pastor for about 5 years. In that time, I skipped a little bit that I had gone to Nicaragua for about 9 months, doing some missions work there. All I ever wanted to do was for a long time was ministry. You know, just wanted to bring the gospel to people and build God's church and bring reform to the church that I still think needs quite a bit of reform. Had, as I mentioned earlier, gone to England for about 9 months, helped start a church there. We moved up to Minnesota. Actually, we thought we might plant a church up there. There was this little small group that had been reaching out to us and asked us to come up. It was only, you know, maybe five couples or so. And I thought, well, I'm not going to raise support or, you know, pull a tithe from these five couples. I'll just get a job. You know, I want to meet people in the community anyway. They're going to be in the community working. So I want to show that, hey, I'm one of you. And so we moved up to Minnesota, must have been 4 years ago or 5 years ago now. I just got a job selling. There's a tiny little town. So I got the only job I could find, which was selling wall clocks, which I know is like the most random thing. And actually, I wasn't even selling them. I was cold calling people to set appointments to sell wall clocks.
Now, real quick, Caleb, sorry, you're going to need to explain a little bit more just for a second, because I can imagine everybody thinking, who sells wall clocks and what, like when we had our conversation, I told you, I'll go to Target and just get my own wall clock and be done with it. Like what's special about your wall clocks? Go ahead and share that so people have some idea.
Yeah, it was as random to me as it sounds to everyone else. But this little tiny town I was in had this big clock company. And so schools and hospitals, they need clocks that are all on the exact same time. So it's called synchronized time systems. So even though you picture trying to haggle some, you know, old couple over buying one wall clock, it's actually a school or a hospital that might need to buy 100 wall clocks at a time with some kind of, whether it be Wi-Fi or something that keeps all those clocks on the same system. So that could be $20,000 for one clock system. Long story short, I thought I was going up there to plant a church and just found the favor of God in my life for business. Really quickly got promoted, really quickly became the top sales rep. Within a short period of time, I sold a little over $600,000 worth of clocks, which for me, you know, I didn't know anything about business going into this. And, just to see those deals coming in, to see my own personal income triple.
And at the same time, you're leading this church. Is that right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So that's an interesting combination of being in ministry, being bivocational.
Yep.
Leading a church as a pastor and then seeing this incredible success in sales. That's really interesting.
It was. And it was, you know, I constantly was fighting it. You know, I'm thinking, okay, when are we going to get to a point when the church is going to be big enough to sustain my income? I was not thinking I'm building a career here. But at the same time, I went from youth pastor salary to salesperson salary, which again, in 8 months, tripled my income. So I was like, all right, well, now that I'm in the business world, let's just have fun with this. What's a higher paying industry? So I moved into life insurance, and it was kind of the same thing, just favor of God, where I, you know, was just selling so many policies. I think I had mentioned to you at one point, my best week ever in life insurance, I sold close to 100 policies in 1 week. And those were one-on-one, face-to-face. So it wasn't that I was selling group policies. And my close ratio wasn't great. It was, I think, 33%. So that means I had about 300 meetings in 1 week, which for those
face-to-face, in-person meetings?
Yeah. So if those of you are listening, you're like, how is that possible? we would go into a group. So I do a presentation to a group and then I just rotate people in like 2 minute meetings. So they'd sit down with me. I'm like, hey, buy this policy. They okay. would tell me no. And I'd say, come on, buy the policy, kind of pressure them a little bit. I didn't feel good about it. Wow. They didn't feel good about it, but I sold a lot of life insurance. So yeah. So the owner of the company, the CEO, he called me up. He said, hey, you won the award. Of course, you know, you're the top salesperson. It was called the Sales Wolf Award. You know, we're flying you and your wife out. We're going to have the bougiest dinner ever. We're going to talk about your future here with the company. And I, on that phone call, said, well, before you do all that, I want you to know that I'm quitting. And, you know, he was just shocked. He's like, you know, you made, I mean, for me, it was 15 grand that week, which, you know, again, as a youth leader, I was making close to 30 grand in a year. So, and that was just a couple of years ago. And so he was just in shock. He was like, how, like, you're making all this money. I know that this is different for you. You're not used to making this type of money. How are you going to quit? And for me, I was like, man, if this is what success feels like, I don't want it, because I was so burnt out. I had just thrown everything I was into it. And I didn't realize how important it was to actually take time to recover. And I was just so exhausted, so depleted, so disengaged. It was almost like I had disdain for, you know, the checks that came in, because I was like, I know how much it costs, you know, and it wasn't worth it.
Wow. So that is a unique perspective. I would say that to have disdain for the checks that come in. I have not heard someone say that before. Honestly, most people that I know would say that the checks actually motivate them further mm-hmm. to do more, and maybe even to spread themselves even more thin and burn them out further. So yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. But now I speak to companies about the importance of sustainable success habits. Certainly part of my intention in talking about rest to companies is opportunities to have gospel conversations. There's a move of God happening in the business world, in the marketplace, that I cannot get away from. I've seen so many people give their lives to Jesus, you know, get born again, get baptized in water, in the context of actually a business events that I've been at. And so as much as my heart is still to be in ministry and do that in a full-time way, and I think that probably will be part of my life at some point. You know, again, I feel so much that God has redirected my steps into the business world, and taking biblical principles like rest into the business world, is something that's, go figure, actually benefits businesses in a pretty significant way.
Oh man. Yeah. Chris and I definitely relate to that. Cause we're both entrepreneurial but also see the potential for ministry impact, kingdom impact in the marketplace. It is huge right now.
Yes.
So, and you and I have talked about this before. I'm a Truth at Work chapter president here in Pittsburgh, and I'm leading a round table of, you know, business owners. And man, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it big time. So I agree. I think, who knows? Maybe this is where God's calling you. Who knows? Maybe you don't end up back in the church. Maybe it continues this way. That's a possibility.
Caleb, you know, you mentioned that you were doing really well from a financial standpoint and a sales standpoint in these jobs, but you were burned out. Can you give us a little bit of a behind the scenes picture of why you were burned out? I mean, walk us through a typical week in your life, because I mean, obviously you're holding down two jobs, at least two jobs, which would make people a little tired. But what was going on where you just felt like you had to quit your job?
Yeah. So with that particular job, the reason we were able to sell so much life insurance is we were going into police departments and fire departments, and we would do our pitches during their roll call. So for a police department, let's say there's 200 guys or 200 officers at a police department, we would do a pitch at, let's say, 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. and then another one at 12 or 1 o'clock when the shift change happened, and then another one at 9 or 10 p.m. So let's say I'm presenting to 20 or 30 guys at 5 a.m. and then presenting again my last pitch of the day at 10 p.m. Then I would stay and rotate those 30 guys in to a room. And so I would be, I might get there at 5 a.m. and then still be writing life insurance until 1 a.m. the next morning. And so this is where a lack of sleep comes into it, because I booked so many back-to-back meetings because I wanted to win this award. I wanted to, the checks were addicting for sure. So, even more than the checks, just success, you know, that dopamine hit of I'm winning. And again, for me, it was all fun. I actually had a generosity goal. I wanted to give somebody in our church. They were in need. And so that was a big motivator for me of, you know, there's this major need in our church. And I had that kind of written up on my board that I was going to hit this sales target so that I could, you know, be able to sow into somebody. And so, yeah, I was just working myself to the bone. But in that scenario, it really was a lack of sleep that did it. So, yeah, when you're working until 1 a.m. and then you're back doing another pitch at 5 a.m., I just felt so sick. And I think sleep, you know, there's an Andrew Huberman quote that I love. He's a professor of neuroscientists at Stanford University. And he says that sleep is the foundation of all physical and mental health. I don't necessarily know if that's true. You know, I'd probably say a relationship with Jesus is, but the fact that you have a neuroscientist saying sleep is the foundation of not just physical health, but actually mental health, that's a big deal. And a lot of other experts are starting to say the same thing. And so I think for me, I wasn't in a place physically healthy, but also mentally not healthy, just because I was output without any input.
I think we're seeing this across the board now. I mean, there's talk, I'm in Florida right now, and there's talk in Florida, but I think other states too, about how we need to back the school day up for kids, because, you know, a lot of times, especially in high school, they're starting school at 7 o'clock, 7:30, and they're getting on a bus at 6 o'clock, and you know, they're teenagers, so they're not going to bed at 9 o'clock in the evening, and they're not performing well in school. They're not doing well in after school activities because they're just sleep deprived.
100%.
And it goes on week after week. So I think, you know, in every age group, working people, younger people, older people, you know, we're seeing that we're not putting a high enough value on getting a good night's sleep, and it's really affecting people's day-to-day lives.
100%. And schools that have backed that time up have seen awesome results from it. So whether it be behavioral issues or performance in terms of grades, certainly people that invest in their sleep, they get a payout from it. And this is one of those things. I mean, I have four kids. My oldest is 5. So 5, 3, 2, and a 3-month-old. And the gap between when my wife has had a great night's sleep and when she's been up with the child in the night, the difference in her personality and demeanor is huge. And we both know it. You know, if she's lacking sleep, all those different challenges are going to be in our communication with one another. And so I think we've all experienced that, where we've gotten in a fight with our spouse, and it's not that we need to go to a marriage event, or we need to read, you know, the 5 love languages or love and respect or something. What we really actually need is sleep. And that affects every single area of your life, whether it's your communication, whether it's your creativity, whether it's your ability to focus, whether it's your ability to perform on a daily basis, whether it's your memory, whether it's your longevity. In fact, most experts would argue that the two things that are going to most determine how long you live in life is your ability to sleep well and your heart rate variability, which essentially just means how your body responds to stress. So both of those things come back to rest, which is really where healing comes, and it's where we fight off diseases. But you know, I think, you know, Andrew Huberman has something there where he says sleep is the foundation of physical and mental health. And I don't think we need to take this out of the realm of the spiritual, because God designed sleep. Like, and it's actually, it's, it's very strange that God designed sleep. If you look at, okay, God designed us to work the garden and to rule and have dominion and be fruitful and multiply, we should stop and ask the question of, okay, so why in the world, with him starting from a blank canvas, would he say, let's have it be that humans shut down for 8 hours a day, a third of their life, they're going to live in darkness and have no effect in advancing my glory on planet Earth. And you could argue that sleep is the first thing that humans did. You know, if we take Genesis literally as a narrative, which I know there can be a lot of debate around there, you'd say, okay, humans made on day six. The seventh day starts with the evening. There's evening and morning the first day. So Adam's all excited. He's ready to, you know, take territory, get to know his wife, extend Eden into Earth. And God says, okay, time to go to sleep. Yeah, it's going to get dark and your eyes are going to close and you're not going to be able to function for the next 8 hours. Then the first seventh day happens and we have a day of rest. And so I do think the foundation of all of life actually has to be starting from a place of rest, working from a place of rest, as opposed to you know, working from that stressed out place and then trying to get as little as rest possible that we can have to jump back into our next day.
That's, man, you just described, I think, what so many people, so many men strive to go as long as they can, as hard as they can. And I hear people will brag about how little sleep they need often. I hear that a lot. And I'm always kind of honestly a little skeptical about that. Maybe some people are made a little different in some way, but you know, I was thinking of Psalm 127, verse 2. I'm sure maybe you're familiar with it with your research you've done, but the NIV version said, "In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves." And the interesting thing about that, it's not just the it's not that he grants sleep to those he loves. It's the other kind of insinuated truth in this, in the Hebrew here, is that he is, for while you sleep, God is providing for you. And so it's interesting that I love what you just said about Adam sleeping, like almost right after that. I would think too, that's a good point. I would think Adam would be like, wait a second, what? We just got started. No, time to rest. I think it's forced trust in God, right?
You're 1,000% right, Mike. That's exactly it. And you look at that verse, that Psalm verse that you just read, there's mm-hmm. two really key elements there. It says, you know, in the builder builds the house in vain. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builder builds in vain. So there's that sense of provision. So God's going to provide for you. And then the next line is, unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman watches the city in vain, or sits on the wall in vain, depending on which translation you're reading. There's that sense of protection. So when you're asleep, you cannot provide for yourself. And when you're asleep, you cannot protect yourself. It's the most vulnerable place that you can possibly be. And so it's interesting that God said, okay, Adam, I'm going to let you, you know, build things. I'm going to let you do stuff. But every single day, there's this dependency on, okay, but ultimately God is my provision. So yes, I'm working the land. Yes, I'm building things, but sleep is very similar to tithing in that you're going to do something counterintuitive, but in trust that God is going to actually provide on the back end for that. And so sleep is surrender. Sleep requires faith. Sleep requires humility. Sleep requires a trust that God is going to provide for you. So even when things have been tight, even when things are difficult, I actually lean into rest harder when I feel stressed. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to take time off this week. I just need to put my head down and work. I recognize, okay, this is actually something of arrogance, thinking that I can, be my own provider where, all right, so let me back this up. Here's my premise. Starting from point one, I believe that there's a God. Point two, I believe that God designed humans to work. One of our primary roles is to work. Point three, I believe that humans work best when we work the way that God designed us to work. That's a big one. Humans work best when we believe, when we work the way God designed us to work. And then we could say point four, I believe God designed us to sleep between 7 to 9 hours every single night. And so for the business Amen. Person out there that's listening to this and says, Caleb, that's impossible for me. I cannot do this because I have so much work to do. I promise you, from a biblical background, you're going to be more effective at your work if you work the way that God designed you to work. And that verse right there says, God gives sleep to those he loves. It's a gift from God that most of his people are not very good at receiving. Just to take this into the maybe the more scientific approach or business approach. I mean, there's a reason that Google, Goldman Sachs, Microsoft, Amazon all bring in sleep trainers. And it's not because they're nice people and progressive companies. It's because they know that it's going to affect the bottom line. You hear Jeff Bezos talk about this. He would say that for him, he prioritizes 8 hours of sleep every night. And this guy's on track to be a trillionaire. So again, for you CEOs out there that are like, I can't do that, I'm too busy. Jeff Bezos and all his executives prioritize sleep. And the argument he makes is that he doesn't need to make a lot of decisions throughout the day. He needs to make a short amount of high quality decisions. And so maybe you got to where you were, let's say you own a lawn mowing business. Maybe you got to where you were hustling, grinding and putting in long hours mowing lawns. Well, hey, you can work 12 hours mowing lawns. That's great. But the more you get to a position where you need high cognitive function, the more you need to prioritize your mental efficiency. And so again, another reason Jeff Bezos, he makes his biggest decisions between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. If somebody comes to him with a hard decision at 4 p.m., he's going to say, let's push that to the next day to when I'm as mentally sharp as possible. And so it's, we need to get out of the mindset of, you know, you can work long hours or you can work quality hours, but you can't work both. Nurses that work 12-hour shifts make 3 times more mistakes than nurses that work 8-hour shifts. And so when it comes to sleep, again, this is so interesting. My favorite quote comes from Bill Clinton. He says, all the major mistakes I've made in my life, I've made because I was too tired. Now, are there any major mistakes Bill Clinton made? I can't think of any right now, but...
That's hilarious because, you know, it's funny too. I'm a recovering pornography addict. And so I think about these things, but in that world, we often, when it comes to lust, we talk about the fact that men struggle when you're the acronym HALT, H-A-L-T, right? Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And, yes. And so, you know, maybe he was tired a lot. That's hilarious. Nope.
Should have just taken a nap, man. Should have come to one of my sleep classes. But it's actually kind of scary because, you know, especially in politics, so many politicians sleep 4 to 5 hours a night. And you look at the data on that, and it is absolutely shocking in terms of the decision-making ability of somebody that's sleeping 4 to 5 hours a night. And again, you think you're being more effective because you're getting in more hours, but what you're effectively saying is, I want all my time working to be at a lower quality. So it really just depends what type of job you have. If you need a high mental capacity, which is primarily the people I work with, executives and CEOs, then it's just counterintuitive to work without sleep. And there's so many studies to back this up. A really simple example I could give you would be a military. They did the study in the military. This is the first person I heard reference this study was Tony Schwartz. But essentially, they had these shooters shooting at a target. And they had one group of shooters say, let's shoot continually. And they had another group of shooters take regular naps and rest time in between. And of course, day one, the ones who are shooting continually outperform the ones that are taking naps because they just have more time. But day two, the ones that were taking naps start to hit the target more often, more consistently. And then by day three, the people that are resting are just dominating the ones that are fatigued without recovery. And there are so many other studies I could reference like that, where in the short term, yes, it's more effective to just say, I'm going to grind and hustle without rest and recovery. But I'm telling you, it's strategically, I don't want to say stupid, I don't want to offend your audience, but it's not the best strategic move to not build recover into your work life. And people that are still bragging about a lack of sleep, it is getting less and less applauded in the business world. More and more CEOs are looking at that as just saying, well, you're just not strategic, or, you know, you have this bravado that's arrogance, but it's actually a poor business mistake. Again, you have somebody like Jeff Bezos saying his whole executive team functions like this. You know, people need to start realizing, hey, turns out the way that God made us is also the most effective way to work.
Man. Okay. That's so good. That is so good. All right. So we've been talking about a lot of the why behind this. So I believe, Chris, right, you've got a question to transition us into. Let's talk now more about the how.
Yeah. And I'm going to start with the tougher questions, Caleb. So, yeah, just get ready. You were in a situation where you were selling life insurance where you said you were up early, you were staying late. I mean, there just wasn't enough time in your day to get a good night's sleep. You were cut off in the morning and you were cut off at night. So it was just really tough. And ultimately, your solution to that was you had to quit your job. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about people. I've got a niece right now who's a resident. And, you know, she doesn't have any choice. I mean, I don't know why they do this. I'm mystified by this. I mean, I've had cousins who are doctors and they've all been through this where they just insist on, okay, you're working a 36-hour shift. I don't know why they do this, but they do. And there's nothing my niece can do about it. So one of my questions is, when you're in a situation like that and you really can't quit your job, I mean, you know, eventually it's going to get better, but right now you're just in a season where, you know, because of travel or because of the requirements of the residency or for whatever reason, you're just not getting a good night's sleep every night. So one of my questions is, can you catch up on sleep? I mean, are there any studies that say that, okay, well, you know, you're going to be up for 24, 36 hours, but then you're going to have a couple of days where you can sleep more normally. Is it possible for your body to catch up? What are some coping things you can do if not, so that you can function?
All right, guys, we are out of time for today. So we will let Caleb answer Chris's question when we get back to the second half of our interview, which will post this Friday. Hope you guys have a great week and we'll see you then. Until then, keep living empowered.